Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to the 457th edition of the Feuerstein's Fire American Soccer Show. I'm your host, Daniel Feuerstein. I'll give you an American perspective of our clubs, leagues, players, national team, and other fabulous moments. You can get your daily reading from me and other writers over at Once a Metro and the rest of the SB Nation family of soccer websites. The chat room is open. Come on in. Discuss amongst yourselves if you like. If you have a question for me, I'll try to answer it to the best of my abilities. As we continue on with the COVID-19 situation here in North America and around the world, all of our leagues, whether it be the Premier League in England, La Liga in Spain, Major League Soccer, United Soccer Leagues Championship, United Soccer Leagues League One, League Two, the NISA, the NPSL, and everywhere around the world, we are still under lockdown here through the coronavirus. Once again, everyone, please remain vigilant. Please keep your head screwed on right. Please remain calm, and we will get through this. This pandemic has definitely tested our mettle, and we have to find a way to continue to remain calm and vigilant, because once again, we need to use our heads and not, I repeat, not lose our heads. I don't want that to happen to us. So please, once again, be safe, be strong. We are all in this together. We are all in the same boat. So let's just be remaining calm and vigilant and safe. Okay, I've already seen some craziness. I've already seen some wackiness, and it's not good. So let's just remain calm and vigilant, and let's just move forward, ladies and gentlemen. It's time to just really, we got to remain strong, as I have already said, and let's just get ready for what is going to be ahead of us, a cure, an antidote to this COVID-19 situation. Let's hope and pray we can get to it as soon as possible and get rid of this damn thing once and for all. I also want to congratulate Major League Soccer. I want to tell them thank you very much for posting, as well as U.S. Soccer, posting these videos. When it comes to Major League Soccer, posting these videos with the help of Fox Sports, with the help of ESPN and their MLS's Facebook page, also probably their Twitter page, all these great classic games that we haven't seen either in a short period of time or we haven't seen in a long period of time. As we all know, this is the 25th year, the 25th anniversary of Major League Soccer. I want to thank them for giving us something to watch, something to look at, something to at least say, you know what, I cannot believe that this actually really happened. For some of you, of course, that have not been around since the league's inception back in 1996, some great games, classic games, of course, watching some other games that, you know, just getting underway. They already played the first match of 1996, which was on ESPN. Phil Shane, Ty Keogh, your broadcasters for that one at the time for ESPN back in 1996. And also seeing Eric Winalda scoring the first goal in league history for San Jose at Spartan Stadium, a sold-out Spartan Stadium, was absolutely fantastic, defeating DC United by a final of a goal to nil. So I bet Bruce Arena at that time did not mind losing to a U.S. men's national team player, a well-known international player like what Eric Winalda was, of course, for our national team. back in the day in 1996. Also, seeing in the U.S. soccer replaying some Open Cup magic, some Open Cup tournaments, who could ever forget, even for myself, I have to admit, it was great to watch 2017 New York Red Bulls at FC Cincinnati at Nippert Stadium when FC Cincy was a part of the United Soccer League's temporary second division sanctioning from U.S. Soccer. What a run they had in the Open Cup in 2017. They started off against the NPSL's AFC Cleveland. Of course, they were the defending champions at that time and defeated them 1-0 in the second round. Victory for FC Cincinnati. Moving on to the fourth round, another 1-0 victory, this time against in-state rivals Columbus Crew from Major League Soccer. They, of course, won that one. Scoreless draw in regulation and extra time between FC Cincinnati and the Chicago Fire at Nippert Stadium. Now, here's the thing. For FC Cincinnati, rounds 2, 3, 4 and the quarters were all at Nippert Stadium. Rounds 2, 3, and 4 were at Nippert Stadium. The quarterfinals was originally over at Miami when the NASL was still around. Miami FC was, of course, the club that was hosting the quarterfinal match over at Ricardo Silva Stadium on the campus of Florida International University in downtown Miami. The original date was postponed because of a torrential rainstorm that would not stop. You couldn't play in a torrential rainstorm, lightning, of course, flashing all over the place at the same time. So it was postponed for a makeup date, which was already done. And FC Cincinnati, once again, wins that one by 1-0. They win their fifth round matchup against the Chicago Fire in the penalty shootout, and then the quarterfinals at Miami on a rescheduled date. And then, of course, the semifinals, no Jivi Fall because of 3 yellow cards in one tournament, and that's a one-match suspension, was not available for the semifinals. Even though Cincinnati scored twice, once in the first half and then once in the second half, it looked like they were going to move on to the Open Cup final, but the New York Red Bulls, of course, had other plans, and Gonzalo Verón made it 2-1 in the 75th minute. 2 minutes later, Bradley Wright Phillips heads the ball inside the near post, 2-2, nails a crossbar to make at least have that opportunity to get a third goal. Did not happen by BWP. Nails the crossbar and out. They go to extra time. Then BWP makes it 3-2 inside the far post. Runs to the away section of the visiting Red Bull fans that went to Cincinnati, made the trip to Cincinnati. And then, of course, big moments for Cincinnati trying to make it 3-3 to at least force, if possible, penalty kick shootout. Never happened. Cincinnati is done and dusted and moving on. I want to thank U.S. Soccer for bringing out these Open Cup matches, rebroadcasting them through Twitter, Facebook. Same thing for Major League Soccer to rebroadcast these games in the past. Fantastic games. It's been unbelievable. And then, of course, we have news today of Grant Wall, not today I should say, but this happened during before the weekend came. As we all know, Grant Wall, sadly, has been fired by Sports Illustrated. And obviously the messy exchange is out there, of course. When you talk about, you know, the getting a pay cut and then you're going to get your pay cut permanently and all that fun stuff. You know, Grant Wall, I respect that man for what he has done to, you know, inform us about soccer in the United States. But without a doubt, I don't think he'll be out of a job for long. I think he will get back on his feet very quickly. I mean, there's other outlets right now. He could always go back to Fox Sports. He could go to NBC Sports. You go to NBC Sports if he wants to. You can even go to ESPN if he wants to. I think for him, he'll get back on his feet. But once again, it's tough. It's very, very tough to see a man like that absolutely lose his job. And, you know, there's a lot of things going on, you know, in this world when it comes to right now with the coronavirus situation. I don't know what was said back in the day. I don't know what was going on in the offices. It's already a terrible mess between Sports Illustrated and Grant Wall. Now, obviously, Sports Illustrated is now owned by the Maven Sports. So all you can say is that it's a situation where it's not good. We got to be careful of what's going on and what was the conversation going to be during that time between, of course, Sports Illustrated and Grant Wall. If you are listening to this program, to this show tonight, I'm very sorry for what happened. Hopefully you get back on your feet, and we'll just have to wait and see what is in the future for Grant Wall, because getting a man like that, my friends, is a big feather in the cap of one of these broadcast sites or these broadcast channels that covers the game and soccer. It's going to be okay. It's going to be all right. And all I can say is that, you know, knowing how long Grant's been in this business, I have no doubt, no doubt whatsoever that he will get back on his feet once this whole coronavirus situation is done and dusted. He'll get back on his feet. And I wouldn't be shocked, to be honest with you. I wouldn't be shocked at all if Grant Wall does join Fox Sports 1's coverage of Major League Soccer because and the World Cup, because he was with them at the same time covering soccer for Sports Illustrated. So I really believe that Grant Wall will probably get back into television. That's just my opinion, of course. I wouldn't put it past him to get back on TV and at least cover the game through Fox Sports. And we don't know if he'll write articles. Obviously, Fox Sports right now doesn't have articles. It's mostly video. But I wouldn't mind. I probably would see something video-wise through Grant Wall when it comes to. Or you know what? You can go to ESPN. You can go to ESPN, and you know he can join in and join the group with the ESPN FC guys, and we'll have to wait and see what's going to happen. But for now, I'm not going to speculate his next move, but I do believe that he will be back on the job as quickly as possible. That's for sure. So we'll have to wait and see what's going to happen with Grant Wall in the future. But I definitely believe that Grant will be back on his feet, without a doubt. He's too talented of a writer not to be out of a job for a very, very long time. He's a very big commodity. Obviously, it's going to happen. So we'll have to wait and see what the situation is. It's very messy right now between him and Sports Illustrated. So we're going to have to wait and see what's going to happen there. But other than that, all I can say is that we're going to have a fun show tonight. We're going to have a very, very fun show tonight because this is a man I've had already on my show to talk about a cup that dates back before the Open Cup ever began, of course, the original Open Cup. And you know him very well as a professor at the campus of Rutgers Newark. Of course, he is also a filmmaker as well as a U.S. soccer historian. And once again, he does another gem, another wonderful documentary. This time, we do not see him on film, but that's okay. Interviewing people, players from a little town I wouldn't say it's little. It's big if you really want to talk about these New Jersey towns, of course. In Kearny, New Jersey, of course, Soccer Town USA is the documentary. You can see it on YouTube. Just go in the search bar, type in Soccer Town USA. Tom McCabe joins me right now to talk about his documentary on the town, as well as, of course, former U.S. men's national team players Tony Meola, Tab Ramos, and John Harkes. Tom, welcome back to the show. I hope you and your family are staying safe through this whole pandemic. And how are you this evening?
We're staying safe. I was just looking at that great rainbow across the Hudson River there about half an hour ago, so we're doing well. Thanks. So hope you and all the listeners out there are doing well too.
Yeah, absolutely. And we all gotta just remain vigilant and strong, and we will get through this. That's for a fact. I know we will. And I know it's a shame so many people are passing on because of this terrible thing. But look, unfortunately, we gotta go through all the negative before we get to a positive. Tom, I have to say that watching that documentary was a lot of fun. It was very interesting. It was a little hairy, but I will say this. I will say this. There's no doubt in my mind the love and the passion for the game of soccer, football, however you want to call it, is alive and well in Kearny. And to see three of their big boys, their three of their big sons in Tony Meola, John Harkes, and Tab Ramos, basically, being on the same national team and at the same time following their love and a path that they knew, I guess, they knew they were going to be into for such a very, very long time.
Yeah, it's really a story of three boys who follow a passion and achieve their dreams, right? From this, town of 30,000 plus, that had a long, long soccer history and heritage. And they, tapped into that and then told their individual stories and then got to do it together. Tab and John are the same age, played on the same youth teams. And, Tony's 2 years younger, but of course they all knew one another and often played, pickup soccer together. And Tony played up, of course, in the youth levels. And then they all joined in that fateful year of 1989 and the run-up to that epic game, which we highlight in the film, down in Trinidad and Tobago, just like those pickup games at the courts, right? It's winner stays on, loser goes home. So it was a thrill to kind of be a steward of that story. I had known it for a long time and knew these guys. And when we got into it, it just continued to give. I think it's the American soccer story through the lens of this, small American town.
And absolutely, and all their friends are being, excuse me, a part of this. I mean, we all know if you're from New Jersey or if you are aware of Kearny, New Jersey, from if you're outside. I'm originally from New York, from the Bronx. I had no idea about Kearny until I moved to New Jersey when I was a kid back in the winter of, well, the spring, winter, spring of 1987. To hear about getting into the sport when we get to the 94 World Cup and to find out about this town of, blue collar town, just like any other town in New Jersey. A lot of blue collared people going to work, working in the mills and all these places that are unfortunately are shut down due to, changes in the economy and changes in the workforce. But still, though, just to hear what everyone's talking about, loving the sport, loving it like, probably youth soccer, the high school level, obviously believing in the college level, professional level, the Scots Club. Everyone knows about the Scots Club and the amateur club that's a part of it, like Thistle FC. I mean, just to hear, not just from those three, but all of their friends that love this game and love representing their town is just amazing to listen to.
One of the greatest compliments I got was, unfortunately, a fellow that we weren't able to interview. He was away on business. But Pete Gaynor was right in that circle of friends with John Hart, Thomas McEwen, Robert McCourt, Mike O'Neill. And Peter turned to me, and he's a friend, and said, "I've always found it really hard to tell my sons what it was like growing up in Kearney. It just was hard to really get at it, the essence of it." And he says, "Now all I have to do is show them this film." So that's a huge compliment from, you know, a Kearneyite, a Kearneyan. And they're hard to please, right? They'll tell you if you screw up, or they'll tell you if, you know, they don't like something. They're very direct, hardworking, honest people. So to get that compliment from him was, you know, wonderful, and, you know, I think validates, you know, what we tried to do.
No, absolutely. I mean, you know, just to get all these people to not just be on the film, but they wanted to throw their two cents in, especially those that wanted to be on in the film but couldn't. I mean, that shows a lot of respect towards you and a lot of respect towards, you know, what you're trying to do to highlight this wonderful town. I mean, obviously, when you talk about the 1950 World Cup team, you always talk about, you know, like Walter Barr and some of the players that came from St. Louis, and nothing against St. Louis or Missouri. I mean, they probably have a solid group of soccer players over there that have been, you know, solid, you know, professional and athletic. Of course, New Jersey, New York, I mean, you know, we have some solid players here as well, of course, back in the day, that they had to mesh with that 1950 World Cup team that did the unthinkable to England in Belo Horizonte. And now you're seeing these three kids, and you're highlighting a town in New Jersey that has just as many great players going through their own system and are absolutely mad about this wonderful game.
Yeah, I mean, I guess the military calls it, you know, the long gray line, right? Or long gray line. Not a military historian, no soccer historian. I might have gotten that wrong. But, you know, Kearney has this long, long history going back to the 1870s. And that first unofficial U.S. international, U.S. versus Canada, at Clark's Field, right where Topps Diner and its parking lot is today. You know, they were playing every year, either here in the United States or up in Canada. From that day, you know, on through these World Cups that we're referencing, there's usually been someone from Kearney or Harrison or both on those teams. So you go to that first World Cup in 1930. It parallels, you know, almost wonderfully with 1990 and Tab, Tony, and John. You have the goalkeeper, Jimmy Douglas. You have the midfielder, the captain from Harrison, Tom Flory, and others, you know. So it was a thing that started with that first official World Cup in 1930, and then 34, Tom Flory is again on the team. 1950 does not have a Kearney or Harrison member of the team, because that was, as you said, mostly a St. Louis-based team and a Philly-based team. So, you know, Kearney probably had some players ready to go, but the closest they got was in that film on that miracle match, that 1-0 victory against England. John Hart was a extra or was a, you know, a star in that film. So he got to play it as the Kearney guy, you know, back when they made the film, I don't know, 10, 15 years ago.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's just fun stuff. I have to ask you this. Obviously, you know, there's a lot of conversation with Tony, with John, with Tab, and their friends. I mean, how much, unfortunately, did you have to cut out? Because, this probably could have been a 3-hour special event if you ever wanted to do it like that. I mean, these guys are just, you know, shooting the breeze. I'm going to try and be as clean as I can, because those guys couldn't do it except for those three. But I was shocked You know, here's a kid. Here I am. Was it 1994 World Cup? I just turned 21 before the World Cup began in the United States. I was working down in Walt Disney World, Tom. I did a college program over there in 1993, 94. The World Cup comes to the United States. I knew of them. I did not know anything about them, obviously, until now, of course, the video you've made. How much did you have to cut out of this? Because to me, it sounds like this could really have been a 3-day documentary or maybe a 5-part series.
Oh, certainly. You know, a lot got left on the cutting room floor, and you know, I learned a lot about filmmaking. This is the first one I've done. You know, I consider myself a storyteller, a historian, but we had, you know, kind of a lean team. If I could just briefly talk about, you know, kind of the first call I got was from a Thorny fellow by the name of Kiko DeWine. Kiko works for Apple right now, but he said, I hear you're writing a book on Carney. I'd love to do a documentary. And I've always been a fan of documentaries. I said, absolutely, let's do it. So we got started, a lot of pre-production stuff, and the storyline kind of fleshed out those initial interviews. And then we hired a freelancer, became the director, Robert Penzel. And then, you know, I think things really clicked when I called up an old buddy from college. We played college soccer together, Bob Bradley at Princeton, and Kirk Riddell is a writer out in Hollywood. The comedy is his area. He hasn't had any real experience in documentaries before this. And then that lean team really shaped and honed the story. So, a process of whittling away, like how tight do we need this story, right? And it was really, you know, kind of a quest, a coming of age, that classic Joseph Campbell, you know, storytelling. You know, what's the journey here? You know, who are our heroes? Who are the anti-heroes? You know, who's accompanying them along this quest? And the quest is just that, to follow your dream and get back to the World Cup. You know, it's been, you know, decades since that 1950 game, right? And that 1950 World Cup, for these guys to just when soccer is just flickering, just surviving after the shutdown of the North American Soccer League, they find a way to get us back to the World Cup, along with their teammates, of course. But the focus of the film is how these three guys end up, you know, being the spine, leading the way. And Carney is the other main character in the film. The town, the people, their teammates, their classmates, their coaches, all, you know, families all factored in to helping them get to that stage and being able to perform.
Let me do this. We got a caller coming in, 973-309. We'll let him in. If he has a question to ask you, go ahead and please. Let's hope it's a serious question. Go ahead if you want to talk to Mr. Tom McCabe, who did the Soccer Town USA documentary.
Yeah, my question, it's a little bit off the mark from maybe specifically Carney only, but I want to ask Tom if he could, to the best of his ability, off the top of his head, what do you think or who do you think is the top 11, maybe top 15 all-time pro MLS players or abroad between 94 and 2002 that came out of the state of New Jersey? Miola in goal, maybe Howard in goal, Berhalter, center back, Camasco, etc. You have a list of maybe 11 to 12 guys that you would put as an all-time pro soccer team out of New Jersey?
I'm scrambling here to write my 11. I've done this somewhere else. I have it in a file, and I believe I know who this caller is. I recognize his voice. He'd be better at naming this team than I would. But, you know, certainly, you know, Tony and Tim, you know, battling, you know, if you want to throw a Michael Bradley, who's played in multiple World Cups, with, you know, some of our great women from the state of New Jersey, you know, that are, you know, highlighting themselves. You know, you clearly got Ramos on that wing. You got Hearts in the middle. I think the backs could be a little bit more, you know, difficult. And I would fill that 11 in, and he didn't charge me with, you know, going back in time. But we have all these greats that I like to highlight, like an Archie Stark, Davy Brown, who were, you know, stars in the 1920s. Then we've had, you know, the Chappelle brothers who were trying to get, the U.S. qualified in the late 40s. And Peter Millar, who played at Boca Juniors, you know, in the 60s and 70s. For a little bit, and you know, these are all coming from New Jersey. Carly Lloyd, you could go on and on and on with the great players on the both the men's and the women's side. So what I will say to the caller is this: it's a great debate. I think there's room in the starting 11, but New Jersey has always and continues to have a disproportionate impact on American soccer, whether it's players, coaches. I mean, the first A-licensed coach, Danny Shelshine, the national team, Gene Chizowitz, Walt Chizowitz, both coached the national team, Bob Bradley, of course, Greg Berhalter right now, Claudio Reyna. I mean, just outsized contributions to American soccer. So I have this, great t-shirt. It's my favorite t-shirt that says New Jersey, the greatest country in the world, right? So I mean, not only could we put an all New Jersey team on the field, we could put our own country, the greatest country in the world, on the field too. But thanks for that call. You caught me a little off guard with naming the 11, but I had fun with it. Thank you.
Thank you very much, and have a good night.
Thank you.
And thank you to that caller. I think that'll be the next documentary there for you, Tom. All New Jersey soccer players, professionals that are that have contributed to the U.S. men's national team, or at least to the game in the country. So that'd be the next film for you. Just to go back on those three guys, to see and to discuss. I mean, obviously, every town, doesn't matter what sport it is, high school football, baseball, basketball, maybe there might be high school hockey if there's something around, soccer. In Bergen County, I know it's Teaneck and Hackensack is always the big rivalry. The Long Island towns, I don't know the rivalries that well, but obviously, each border town has their own rivals against another town that's not too far. What was it about Kearney and Harrison that, this rivalry has, I wouldn't say bloodthirsty, but extremely competitive?
Well, if you listen to Sal Rosamilia, who is featured in the film, great goalkeeper and Tony Meola's best friend growing up. I mean, they were three sports stars, right? They were in basketball and baseball together. He's like, there's no rivalry between us and Harrison. It's like the big brother, little brother, or, neighbors. But, Kearney's much bigger. Harrison's, smaller. And, size, mattered in this rivalry. But Harrison would get him every once in a while. But this rivalry was played for ages and ages. The beginnings of high school soccer in the early 1900s had these Harrison-Kearney games. They would play on election day, which was a day off at that time, and thousands of people would go to these games, and there was a big brawl once. I think it was players and the fans, and it was just a melee, and they stopped the game for about 15 years. They couldn't agree, to play it. But it's actually not being played right now. I mean, that game was drawing about 5,000 fans at Red Bull Arena every year, and it hasn't been played, I think, for the last 2 years, which is a shame, because they're both a soccer hotbeds who have won all sorts of state championships. Kearney at the Group 4, the biggest level, and then Harrison at Group 1, the smallest level. Neighbors, people really tap into the high school part of the film because they went to high schools. They had rivals. It's kind of like Friday Night Lights and, this sense of the high school event under the lights, with your rival, that kind of brings out the best in you and brings out the story, the
The one part of the film I really loved, and I had a laugh because it was really hilarious. Tony's friend promised him he would go streaking if the U.S. Got not just a win but a clean sheet against Colombia in their second group stage match over at the Rose Bowl. And, you know, thank God it didn't happen. Thank God that Tony let the goal in.
Sal, who I was texting with earlier today, believes that, you know, but he was ready. He had his shirt off and he was going to make his way down. And what I loved about that story is Sal gave it to us first, right? You know, that's a story that had been told many times, and Sal kind of, you know, gave it. It wasn't like we heard it from someone else and then had to go to Sal to, you know, kind of say, hey, what do you think about this? So he fessed up, and then, you know, when we asked Tony, he got a good laugh out of that and says, you know, the world doesn't know what I did for him by letting in that one goal against Colombia. So, one of those great moments. And Carney is a hard place. It is a hard-working, tough place, but also full of humor. So I really hope that humor comes out in the film, because these people are funny. And a lot of it's centered around these events, you know, that happen on the soccer field or off the field. You know, it's the bonfires, the parties, the traveling, you know, to follow their friends, you know, it's all there. So I really think that resonates with the viewer, you know, because everybody has best friends. Everybody has a group that they're proud of, a town that they're proud of. And this, you know, shows that off in the soccer context.
Yeah. Yeah, that's fantastic. I got to tell you, that was a lot of fun to listen to, Tom. And, you know, that story out of everything. And, of course, going to someone's house to stay over and having a freaking party. Like, you bring New Jersey, you bring Carney from New Jersey all the way to California just so you can hang out at some – I guess they made a new friend with this doctor and his wife to borrow their house to have a pool party in between.
There's a backstory there. So this fellow is Dr. Sarens, and was in Mission Viejo, California, which was, you know, where the Olympic training center was in the United States prior to the 94 World Cup. Not many of them were playing professional soccer, so they were in residence, right? The chunk of them.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, Chad is off in Spain playing. John is in England. Tony's, you know, at this Mission Viejo base, and his host family is this Sarens family. So Tony would go there on weekends, family meals, interact with the kids, and, you know, really got to know them. And after that epic win against Colombia at the Rose Bowl, Doc says to Tony, why don't you have your friends over? I don't know if that's a good idea, knowing that these you know, guys are numerous and gals are numerous, and they're just come and take over the house. And that's, you know, what happened. So I reached out to Doc to see if he had any pictures, any video. Didn't have much. He said he had video of Alexi Lawless playing the guitar on his couch. And I haven't seen that video, but he says he has it somewhere, which is an American soccer treasure, I guess. This was kind of the family environment, the small time, you know, feel of the national team at that point, right? They had host families who invited them and their friends over for a get together after, you know, beating one of the World Cup favorites, Colombia 2-1. That was, you know, the Carney Army assembling again in the Rose Bowl and coming back to celebrate, you know, what their friends, you know, had done. You know, not one, not two, not three of the people we interviewed, more than that. Like, they had a collective sense of, we did that. Can you believe we just did that? Which I think is the essence of a national team, right? When you take such pride in your national team, it's not the 11 or the 18 or, you know, the group of players and the staff. No, it's we as a collective body, you know, we, the United States national team, we just did that. And the pride that we have in their performance representing us, I think, is what international soccer is all about.
Mm-hmm. And, of course, in that World Cup in the group stage, 4 points, the draw with Switzerland, the shocking victory over Colombia, a bad loss to Romania, even though my parents are from Romania, but that's okay. You know, they're happy they were Americans when they came over here, of course, back, you know, well after the Second World War. And then there's that big match against Brazil. And I've asked this – I've had Marcelo Balboa on last week, and, you know, I want to ask you this question because, you know – well, first things first, I missed that game because I had to work in Disney World, unfortunately. I missed watching the game, but I heard they lost 1-0, and I said, well, you know, it's not so bad. And then when you get to the news, it's like, wow, what happened there with, of course, Tab Ramos getting that flying elbow, that head force trauma that he received, sadly – from I forget who the player's name was, but
Leonardo.
Thank you.
Yeah,
he got the red card in that game that put Brazil down to 10 men. Knowing about how Tab played, and you've probably seen him play a lot more than I have, obviously, being from the area or at least visiting the area as much as you have. Do you believe that if Tab Ramos did not get that swinging elbow right along his head, if he does not get carted off, do you think the USA would have had an upset special?
I'm not going to say yes. I'm going to say it would have been a possibility, right? At 11-11, mm-hmm. You think, oh, they have less of an opportunity as opposed to being a man up, you know, with the red card expulsion. Tab was so good in that first half, you know, right till the end when he took that horrific elbow. And then that trauma sets in, right? Here's one of their teammates, you know, dressed, you know, headed to the hospital, right? So if you've played sports and you've had a teammate that gets hurt or sick, you know, you're feeling for them, you're distracted. So I think there was a level of distraction for the U.S. in that second half, even though they were up a man. And Tab was their creator. He's their dribbler. You know, he set up a great chance that when all the – you know, almost tucked in that first half. I think logic says if we can play Brazil for a half up a man, we'll take it. But the way the game was going and the contributions that Tab was making, you know, you almost just say, hey, let's take our chances at 11-11, even strength, and see if we can go toe-to-toe with them. As a historian, you know, you can't deal in the counterfactual, but I think they would have a better go of it at 11-11.
Yeah. I mean, watching some of the film that he was able to do as a child in youth soccer and, of course, what he did against Colombia, to me, because his family is from Uruguay, you know, Uruguay, Colombia, Argentina, Brazil, they can play against each other. They know how to play against each other because, you know, South American footballers – are just exquisite players that it's like a ballet with boots. You know what I mean? They know how to face each other. And this is where, honestly, I think Leonardo and some of the Brazilian players were scared because here's Tab Ramos with the ball. Look what he's able to do. Look how he's able to dance around them. Seeing the videos and you know, the game played, and it's like, you know, he is not saying everyone else wasn't, but he was their equal, that he can challenge them and force a possibility of having a shot on frame
or create something for somebody else, which he had done prior
exactly,
you know, through his injury in that game. Yeah, I mean, Tab for me was their best player, most creative, most explosive. And he was a danger man, you know, in the run up to that game and in that first half. So you'd hate to say that, you know, that was a deliberate, foul and trying to take him out. But it was almost like a perfect storm. Tad had dropped his shoulder, you know, Leonardo swung blindly and you know, if he hit him in the shoulder, you know, a couple inches, you know, down, you know, it would have been okay, right? I mean, if it, you know, kind of grazed the top of his head and went off, glancing blow, you know, it would have still probably been a card, but it would have been the trauma that, you know, getting hit in the temple. And as an interviewer, I'm in the chair opposite Tab, and I know this question has come up because we're talking about the Brazil game. And I had interviewed him a couple times prior to that, and I had not asked him about this play. And then I just finally asked him. I handed him a picture. I had the video queued up to kind of bring him back to that moment. And he did not mind answering the question. I only asked it once. I didn't say, hey, could you say that again? You know, do like take two. But he said it felt like – and then you have that follow-up commentary by Sunil Gulati and Paul Gardner. And he went to a hospital at Stanford, and some of the doctors said you probably shouldn't play again. You know, in day and age now where we're much more advanced in terms of soccer and brain injuries and that type of thing, maybe that would have been a blow that he would have had to seriously consider, you know, being his last game, his last minute on the field. But, you know, obviously he played on. I'm a pioneer in MLS, and now he's doing great things coaching in MLS. So, yeah, I mean, for me, he's a special, special player in the canon of American soccer. And the previous caller asking for the top 11. Tab, I would pencil right in, right at the start.
Oh, absolutely. I completely agree with you there. I definitely agree with you there. When you talk about guys like Tony and John, what they were able to do. I mean, Tony, it's amazing because, you know, all these years we've known him as a goalkeeper. I never knew that he was actually pretty good as a goal scorer. Why did Tony remain as a goalkeeper and not maybe an attacking forward at times?
Well, I think just that the jump up, right? I mean, he probably could have played forward in college, but if he was going to be a pro and an international, you know, the goal was his home. And that's one of the kind of great things about friendship, right? You know, he and Sal, same grade, best friends since middle school, rivals, and they're both goalkeepers. And Sal, you know, went on to be an All-American goalkeeper at Columbia University and, you know, played some pro and played in youth national teams and I think was in a full national team camp. You know, so he was – amazing in his own right. So I think, you know, the strength in the team was let's get Tony up top. And I believe the way I've seen it, you know, heard it described is he scored a bunch of headers off corner kicks, long throws, you know, using his size and his strength and his athletic ability just to be a terror up top. And it was like almost 30 goals in his senior year, leading the state in scoring. So, you know, remarkable athletic accomplishment by Tony, and then that strengthens the team, and you know, you and your best friend are on the field. I mean, what a great story.
No, it's a fantastic story, and I love talking about it. When it comes to John, you know, how smooth was he on the ball, you know, from being a young player, whether it's in high school, with a national team. We know how strong he was in Major League Soccer, obviously with DC United. We know he played in England before coming back to play in MLS. I mean, what type of a player was he? Was he smooth and silky on the ball? Was he in the right places? Was he a poacher? What would you say would be his style?
Definitely, you know, a number eight, box to box midfielder who is just putting in the mileage. You know, if they, you know, calibrated that, he would have been right up at the top of the team at the time, you know, just running, and, you know, and running and tackling and organizing, setting some goals up, scoring some goals. So, you know, a guy, you know, like, you know, Steven Gerrard, right? You know, that type of player. And really the heart and soul, right? So he is the quintessential Kearney guy, right? The son of Scottish immigrants, tapping into, you know, all that is that Scottish inheritance, and, you know, the way they play the game, the short passing game, you know, the tackling, the running. So he's probably, you know, one of the top competitors in U.S. soccer history. I mean, I just read that great article today about Clint Dempsey, you know, in The Athletic, and Matt Pence. And that same combative, competitive style that John Hark's had.
Yeah, I agree with you there. And, you know, it's just wonderful to see what's going on. You know, when MLS came alive and started in 1996, of those three, obviously, Tab Ramos, Tony Meola, they're the only two national team teammates to be on the same club, the Metro Stars, of course, now the New York Red Bulls. John playing for DC United, did John, granted, he only came over when it was DC and the Metro Stars, but did he feel upset? Did he feel sad that he couldn't be the trifecta with Tony and Tab to play for the Metro Stars? And I mean, I know obviously it's a moot point because he was part of those MLS Cup title teams in the early when the league got started in the first three years. But still, though, did John feel sad he couldn't play at Giant Stadium as his home stadium?
Yes, they all wanted to play there, right? They all grew up going to the Cosmos game. They were ball boys. They played on Carney Day on the field in the youth preliminary game. So, yeah, they all wanted to be there. And I think that Charlie Stolentano tried to get them all there. But remember, Peter Vermees is the fourth member. You know, it's the 3+1. I mean, Peter Vermees was right with them in their college days, in their national team days. You know, he played in 90, was on the field in 1989 when they qualified, you know, for the World Cup. So, you know, they had the three, right? They had Tab Ramos, Tony Meola, and Peter Vermees. And if they grabbed, you know, John, that would have been amazing too. But, yeah, I mean, I guess the consolation there is that he got to win all those titles with DC United.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, look what they're doing now. Tony Meola's in broadcasting. John, of course, bouncing around as a assistant coach to Bruce Arena when he was running the Red Bulls, of course, at Giant Stadium, then going to the USL at FC Cincinnati as their head coach, now with Greenville in USL League One. Tab Ramos being a very successful youth national team head coach with the under-20s, four consecutive under-20 World Cups, that getting to the quarterfinals, and now, of course, head coach of the Houston Dynamo and MLS. What do you think about them, you know, in their, you know, as coaches or broadcasters or analysts for television? What do you make of those three right now?
Well, I mean, they're still, you know, giving back to the game. When we released this, I sent them all an email and say, here it is. Could you please share? And, you know, thanks for, you know, being a part of it all. And Tab came back and he's like, oh, this is great, guys. You know, let's keep pushing on and let's do a Soccer Town USA too. So I think they know that they're not done, right? They're in their early 50s. I have some really good years ahead of them to grow the game in their various capacities. You know, Tab now at the club level, having been so successful at the youth, you know, national team level. John, as, you know, not just a coach, but he's, you know, director of sport and working on the business side, you know, at Greenville. He got him to the championship game last year. And then Tony, who I think I read somewhere they call him kind of the, you know, the Tony Romo voice of American soccer, right? He's got this kind of soothing voice, you know, good analysis, you know, quite good, you know, behind the microphone. But remember, he was coaching too with the Jacksonville Armada down in Florida in the NASL. So, you know, these guys aren't done. I think they're, you know, kind of, you know, in the middle of their journey, you know, for that second half, if you will, right? The, you know, after their playing career, the second half, what are they going to do? And they're still, you know, contributing mightily to the American soccer community.
Absolutely. And I forgot about that. Tony was head coach of Jacksonville Armada back in the day when they were still in the NASL. And out of the three, Tony's the only one that actually got two chances to play for, you know, the same club, different names, originally in MLS in 96 as Metro Stars, and then, of course, the switch over to the Red Bulls in 2006. What's it like for Tony to have two chances to play for your same hometown club? I mean, that must have been really fantastic for him to do that.
Oh, yeah, he's a Jersey guy. Started here and kind of finished, you know, here. You know, I'm winning that MLS Cup with Kansas City. He was amazing that year. So, yeah, he got to, you know, do it all as well as Cap. I mean, I think we're still, you know, as Metro Stars, Red Bull fans, waiting for, you know, something more than, you know, the supporter shield, right, that MLS Cup. It would have been great if they started out that tradition back in the, you know, mid to late 90s. I'm sure they'll be there if they're in an MLS Cup.
No, absolutely. You know, MLS Cup, U.S. Open Cup, you know, any trophy would be fantastic to get. But obviously those are the big cups that the big boys want to win. Tom, finally, for me, how much feedback have you gotten from this documentary? You don't have to get anything from me because you know I'm going to be in your corner regardless. But I thought it was well done. I thought it was fantastically put together. What feedback have you gotten from the soccer community, especially from the locals in Kearney, New Jersey?
Well, I think, you know, maybe there's three levels there, right? It's what did the people of Kearney think about the way we portrayed their town? Was it an honest, authentic assessment of what it was like? And we have gotten that feedback. And that's a tough crowd to please. So we're happy with that. And then, you know, it's the Jersey folks who kind of grew up in this orbit, right? They knew of Kearney. Maybe they ventured in, but now they get, you know, a much closer peek. And then, you know, that third ring, you know, the American soccer public, you know, that had heard of this place, you know, maybe mispronounce it Kearney or Kearney. And then they get, you know, inside the story. And then, you know, there's even folks, you know, who are, you know, either the talking heads like a Paul Gardner. You know, he sent me a nice email the other day. I sent him the link and he's like, wow, this is really, you know, wonderful. You really captured the moment. And it was honestly and lovingly told. So, you know, that is an email to cherish. And one of my wife's friends who watched it, not necessarily a soccer person, her husband is, but she was like, I get it. It's a love letter, right? And I guess it is in some respects, you know, a love letter to, you know, American soccer past that people don't know a whole lot about, right? This kind of 80s and 90s story. We told it with passion. We told it with love. And as we said when we released it, you know, it's our gift to the American soccer community. So hopefully people take it as such. Not that we're not open to criticism, but, you know, we're proud of the work we put in and the story we told.
Tom, thank you very much for your time. I really do appreciate you coming on the show. Once again, it was wonderfully done. The passion was there. I definitely felt it. I loved every minute of it, watching it. Congratulations on another wonderful piece that you have promoted and directed and pieced together. Hopefully there'll be another one, and I'd love to have you back on for that.
Thanks for everything you do for soccer, and thanks for having me on again.
No problem at all. Have a good night, and please, once again, you and your family be safe.
You too. Take care.
Take care. Tom McCabe, professor over at Rutgers Newark, filmmaker, U.S. soccer historian. Fantastic to have him back on to talk about this brand new documentary, Soccer Town USA. It's on YouTube. My name's Daniel Feuerstein. Thank you for listening to me tonight. And as always, please enjoy your football. Thank you. Have a good night, everyone. Stay safe. Take care. So long. And bye-bye for now.